Hello and welcome to another episode of the Vinyl Countdown, the podcast where I, Jeremy Levine, break down my favorite vinyl releases from cover to cover and everything in between. And fade it out. All right. So this week I'm back after a month-long hiatus, and I'm super excited to be back. I have been writing and recording and putting all kinds of cool shit together. Hopefully that will come together for the month of March. I don't want to give anything away yet, but it's going to be pretty fun and cool, and I hope y'all enjoy it. But this week, I will be talking about a classic album, 2017's Damn by Kendrick Lamar. Now, this album came out around a time, I want to say, like, it was a transitional period, right? Like, I was leaving CentOS to go to where I am now, and it was kind of a weird time. Obviously, you know, switching jobs after just being somewhere for 9 years, it just really didn't, I didn't know if I was ready for it and it was the right move or not, but whatever the case, it turned out to be the right move and it's fine. I forever associated with that time period, and it's such a good record. Like, from start to finish, it's one of my favorite albums of the last decade. Touche Amore Stage 4 actually took top honors for that in my poll that I did for myself. But this album would be a close second, or, I mean, it's so fucking good. And one thing, too, which I'm trying to rectify, I'm trying to get past it, but or get more of them, because there are quite a few rap records that I want. I don't have a whole lot of rap vinyl. Some like N.W.A. Straight Outta Compton is one that I really want. I do have pretty much all of Kendrick Lamar's albums, I think, on vinyl, but that's really kind of it. I think I have If I Ruled the World by Curtis Blow, but I really don't have a lot. Like, that's an area that I am sorely lacking in, but I would like to start finding more. Like, I know they're out there. Fuji's, you know, the score is one I've been wanting for years. I know the pressing I want, but it's I never got around to getting it, and then now it's like gone up pretty much like double the price of where it was before. So it's one of those ones I need to get my hands on before it gets to like the triple digit you know, area, right? But another cool thing about this record, I mean, I'll get further into it and everything else, but so if you didn't know, it won a Pulitzer Prize, right, for music, which was the first rapper to ever be awarded that award since the awards expanded to music in 1943. But he's also the first winner who was not a classical or a jazz musician, which is really fucking cool, right? I couldn't think of a better rap album, or I guess almost album period, that would, I can't think of another album that'd be deserving of such a high award, especially for writing and the storytelling within the album, the social consciousness of every, I mean, we'll get into it. But before we get into all of that and, you know, Kendrick Lamar and his history, you know, aka K-Dot, aka Kung Fu Kenny, right, all that good stuff, let's get on down to Variant Corner. So Discogs has 7 listed on their site. Standard Black, released in 2017 in Europe and the U.S., a limited edition red for the U.S. and Europe as well that is signed, which is the one that I originally wanted before I got the one that I got. A numbered clear edition from 2018, again, the U.S. and Europe, limited to 15,000 in both for a total of 30,000. And also, it features a reverse play order, which I will get into later because that is important and really fucking cool. And finally, the one that I have, the 2020 repress on Forest Green, which was a Target exclusive. Now, the black variant is going for around $20 to $60, which my initial holdup was I just didn't want that variant. Like, I wanted to hold out for the one that I really wanted, you know? But if you really want this album, there's like 130 plus that are up for sale for between $20 and $60. So you can definitely get it for cheap, pretty much whenever you want, right? Now, there are 38 total for the red sign variant, which is a little more expensive. Like, the start around $80 and go all the way up to $2,000, which is like, come on, nobody's gonna pay that. But of that 38 or so that are available, most are around the $100 to $150 mark. So, I mean, if you really want it, and you want it signed, and you want a cool like collector's edition, then hey, I wouldn't be above paying that, I guess. Like, I mean, I guess I was, but that's really not that bad of a price considering that I paid that much or more for quite a few records last year. But whatever the case, then you've got the one that I wanted. I want, in addition to the one that I have now, the clear one, which there are 26 of those for sale, ranging from $83 to $330, but mostly again are within the $100 to $150 range. And lastly, the forest green is, there's 21 of them for sale, starting at $15, which is actually cheaper than Target's selling them for, and goes as high as 100. But that's one that, I mean, you could probably just walk into Target and get it. Or if even if not, like I said, there are some that are pretty cheap. What's kind of cool about it is the green is kind of deceptive. Like in regular light, it almost looks black, but then in direct light, it really lights up and like it's forest green, but it's like a real vibrant forest green, I guess. It looks really nice. Also, the one thing I was kind of worried about, because I do have actually Good Kid, Mad City by him, is also a Target exclusive that I bought that is on clear vinyl and it looks cool. Like everything is great, but it's not that it sounds bad. It's just that it doesn't sound quite as good as I would have hoped. But this one sounds amazing. Like the instrumentation is all clear. The bass is heavy, but it's not like distorted. Like the speaker never like bottoms out or whatever, which that is also a limitation of my speaker as well, that the sub that I have is not the greatest. So certain bass frequencies will like, it'll rumble and kind of sound like I said, it will kind of bottom out. But with this one, even cranked up, the bass is like hitting hard. Like it's like booming throughout the house, but it isn't bottoming out and making this weird. So it's like, I don't know. It sounds fucking great. Vocals are clear. Like it's perfect. Like it sounds pretty much exactly the way you would want this album to sound or how you would think it should sound. Right. So, I mean, just, I can, you know, spoiler alert, skip to the end, but I highly recommend it if you don't have it on vinyl yet, or if you somehow just never heard it at all. I mean, by all means, please pick it up and listen to it because you won't be sorry. But a little bit about Kendrick Lamar, real quick, before we get into the album. Kendrick Lamar Duckworth, born June 17th, 1987, is an American rapper, songwriter, record producer. Since his debut album with the mainstream. Into the mainstream with Section 80 in 2011, which is not on official vinyl yet. So, gets back to my previous statement. I have all of his studio albums that are on vinyl. Because To Pimp a Butterfly, which came out after, was the second album, or I guess third album. But Good Kid, Mad City, To Pimp a Butterfly, and then Damn, I have those three on vinyl, but that's the only ones that were ever officially released on vinyl, right? Section 80, there's like three or four variants, I think, that are available, but they're all bootlegs, and I mean, they probably sound fine, but it's like, it's not an official release, and they're kind of expensive, so it's like, you know, I just want to stay away from that until they finally just press it, you know what I mean? But, so it says here, from what I got from Wikipedia, is that he has been regarded as one of the most influential artists of his generation, as well as one of the greatest rappers and lyricists of all time. I would have to agree with that, and I've had this conversation with my brother before. And other people in general, for me, and this is again, for me, my opinion is Kendrick Lamar will be the greatest rapper of all time. You know, four albums in, countless mixtapes, features, everything else. To me, I haven't heard a bad thing from him. Even if the song he's in is bad, his part is always really good, right? And my brother made the point that, oh, well, Drake's never been in anything that I didn't like, or this and that. It's like, you know, it's all subjective, right? But if you want to go off like sales numbers, yeah, Drake sells a bunch of fucking records. Okay, cool. But I don't know, man. There's something about Kendrick, not only his voice, his delivery, his flow, and everything else, his lyrics and the stuff he's talking about, and the way he tells a story and weaves in all these social aspects and, everything that he talks about and the way that he presents it is better than any other rapper I've ever heard. You know, that includes, which I mean, fucking do with this what you will, but to me, man, like, you know, people would like to put Tupac on that pedestal of that type. Like, Tupac to me was overrated. I'm sorry. he's overrated. Notorious B.I.G. was, I mean, I don't know about overrated, but it's like, you know, they got shot down so early in their careers. You know, yeah, they had some really good songs, you know, but really didn't have a whole lot before they were tragically, you know, their careers were cut short. And I just don't know if they would have kept up that quality of music. Or if you think about like Tupac, he had how many like hundreds of songs written, recorded, like produced and all this shit when he died. And it's like, yeah, okay, you got this catalog of 150 songs by a talented songwriter. At least 10 of them would be good. You know what I mean? Like, that would make you the greatest rapper of all time. It just makes you maybe the most prolific rapper of all time, you know, and still very good in your own right. But I don't know. That's a whole debate discussion that people don't like. They, you know, they get really defensive about Tupac and Biggie. But I'm not taking anything away from them, saying I don't think that they're the greatest. That's all. Right now, I think the current GOAT would be Jay-Z. Just simply because of, first of all, what he's done, not only for rap, but just as an entrepreneur, you know, being an NBA team owner, coming up as a rapper, to doing all the things he's done, with Beyonce at his side, with her doing, making like real good, like boss moves and shit, right? And together they've built this empire, and it's like, that's not something we've ever seen in rap before, right? And not only that, he's still making good ass songs this far into his career. Like, Jay-Z's been around. I've been knowing, the first song I ever heard about him was Dead Presidents by in 1995 or whatever, right? So now what, 26 years later? I know he was out before that. He was doing other stuff before he was on his own like that, but you know, 26 years later, he's still putting out songs, he's still making money, he's still doing the stuff he's doing. And I mean, it's just he has had an incredible career. Incredible. So I don't know, man. It's hard to take anybody. It's hard to put anybody up against him. You know what I mean? And with Kendrick Lamar, it's like, I guess, like I said, for me, he's my GOAT. But realistically, overall, I think Jay-Z is probably going to be it. I take back my previous. I think Jay-Z will probably be the GOAT, and that'll just be it for a long time. You know what I'm saying? But whatever the case, that's an argument. That's a discussion people like to have. It's fun. Anybody listening, you know, I'll post this on Twitter, and I'll probably put the question up about that. Who do you think is the greatest rapper, or who's your favorite rapper? This, you know, I'd like to get a discussion about that going. It'd be kind of fun, right? But now, aside from his solo career, going back to Kendrick Lamar here, he was also known as a member of the hip-hop supergroup Black Hippie, alongside his top dog entertainment label mates Absol, J-Rock, and Schoolboy Q. Raised in Compton, California, Lamar embarked on his musical career as a teenager under the stage name K-Dot, which some of my friends, actually only one, Giovanni, shout out, called me J-Dot sometimes, because whatever. Now, he released a mixtape with them under that name that garnered local attention and led to his signing with indie record label Top Dog Entertainment. Began to gain recognition in 2010 after his first retail release, Overly Dedicated, which is really fucking good. The following year, he independently released his first studio album, Section 80, which included his debut single, High Power. Now, by that time, he had amassed a large online following and collaborated with several prominent hip-hop artists. Then the major label debut, Good Kid, Mad City, released in 2012, was met with critical acclaim, certified platinum. It was his third album, To Pimp a Butterfly, in 2015, incorporated more elements of funk, soul, jazz, spoken word. It became his first number one album on the Billboard 200 and was the most acclaimed album of the 2010s. Now, I will stop right there for a second. There's one thing about that album that I personally did not like it when I first heard it. It took me a minute to really, like, quote unquote, get it. And it was one of those things that's like, man, you know, I think I like this album. I'm liking it. Beats are good, you know, and I'm all about lyrics. I love lyrics and everything else, right? But sometimes I like to put something on and maybe just dance or just kind of, you know, vibe to it or whatever, right? And it's like, Kendrick, man, I'm just trying to dance, bro. I'm not trying to, you know, explore the plight of the black man in in America right now. I get it. I'm black and I go through it every day. I understand. But it's like, man, I kind of want to break. It's like, I just want to have fun, bro. You know? So for a few years, actually, I just didn't listen to the album. I was like, man, it's a heavy, heavy album. And if you really want to get into it and you want to get in that headspace, it'll fucking take you there. But it's incredible. Like, I listened to it recently, like just like a year or so ago, I guess. And I was like, God damn, I've been sleeping on this album for years, you know? But it's great. So that's one of those ones, like, I'm kind of kick myself sometimes. I'm like, man, I should have gave it more of a chance or a few more listens before I kind of shelved it, you know, when I did, right? But anyway, so 2016 saw Untitled Unmastered, which was a collection of unreleased demos that originated during the recording sessions for To Pimp a Butterfly, which that Untitled Unmastered is also fucking great. It is on... I think it's on vinyl. I think it's on vinyl. That's what I need to get. But then, again, 2017, like I said, it released his the album Damn. Lead single Humble topped the U.S. charts, Billboard 100, while the album became the first non-classical, like I said, non-classical, non-jazz album to be awarded the Pulitzer Prize for Music. Then in 2018, he wrote and produced 14 songs for the soundtrack to Black Panther, which also received critical acclaim. It was fucking great, too. Dude can do no wrong. So, many accolades he's gotten over his career, right? But just a short list include 13 Grammy Awards, 2 American Music Awards, 5 Billboard Music Awards, a Brit Award, 11 MTV Video Music Awards, the Pulitzer Prize, and an Academy Award nomination. In 2012, they actually, MTV named him the hottest MC in the game on their annual list. Time named him one of the most, 100 most influential people in the world in 2016. In 2015, he received the California State Senate's Generational Icon Award. 3 of his studio albums have been listed in Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Albums of All Time that came out last year in 2020. That's insane, too. One of my favorite bits of trivia and one of my favorite things about the promotion leading up to the release of Damn, on March 23rd, 2017, he released the single The Heart Part 4. Then a week later, he released Humble, right? And then on April 7th was when the album came out. Now, April 7th, it was available for pre-order and confirmed to be released on April 14th. Man, so that song is fucking incredible. The Heart Part 4. I don't know how many times I listened to it. Man, I listened to it a lot. But it's incredible. Like, the way he's talking shit, but then he's not, but then he is. And it's like the way he weaves everything he's trying to do. And like, there's even some, which if you go back and listen to it now, which I didn't realize that at the time, it's been a while since I heard it. There's some beat switches in that song, right? But they're beats from songs off of Damn, which was the upcoming album. You know what I mean? So really cool the way he did all that. But so on May 4th, 2017, Damn was certified platinum. Not even a month after it was released. So real quick, you know, the significance of the track list being reversed. In the hours after Kendrick Lamar released the album, fans start throwing around ideas about the album's architecture. The album opens and closes with Kendrick saying flatly, "So I was taking a walk the other day." So on the opening song, Blood, that line opened up into a short allegory and ends with a gunshot, right? On the final track, Duckworth, the gunshots came at the end of the track before the line. It was a coda, and Kendrick fans who flood Reddit and Song Genius and everything else, they tried to pick it apart. There was no second album in the end, you know, despite people... I remember that being a thing. People were saying, like, oh, he's going to come up with a new album called Nation, where the track list is going to be reversed, so you put them together as Damnation, you know, right? That never happened. But so in an interview with MTV News, he explained the idea behind the symmetry, right? Damn, he said, was always supposed to work backwards. He said, quote, "I think like a week after the album came out, fans realized you can play the album backwards. It plays as a full story and even a better rhythm. It's one of my favorite rhythms and tempos within the album. It's something that we definitely premeditate while we're in the studio. Said, I don't think the story necessarily changes. I think the feel changes. The initial vibe, listening from the top all the way to the bottom, is this aggression and this attitude, you know. It says DNA and exposing who I really am. You listen from the back end, and it's almost the duality and the contrast of the intricate Kendrick Lamar. Both of these pieces are who I am. It's a really cool touch, too. And does sound awesome. Again, we play that way. And again, I want that variant of the record that is set up that way, because that'd be fucking great. So, track one, Blood. On Blood, Kendrick is shot by a blind lady he's trying to help. The blind lady can be thought of as representing consequences of the damnation referenced in the book of Deuteronomy. The duality of obeying God and being blessed, or disobeying him and being damned, giving into wickedness, or admitting your weaknesses and submitting yourself to God play a major role throughout the album. I don't subscribe to any of that, but he makes it fucking cool. I will say that. Like, it's, yeah. The gunshots on Blood and Duckworth, again, you know, support that theory, right? And represent the outcome of following either path. On Blood, Kendrick is shot because he, quote unquote, lost his way and became damned. While on Duckworth, the scenario is put in reverse and Kendrick lives, breaking the chain of his people. DNA, right? From being cursed because of the actions of his father and Top Dog, which I'll get into. In a Beats 1 interview with Zane Lowe, Kendrick refused to speak on the deeper meaning of the skit, opting instead to let the art speak for itself. When asked whether it represented the, quote, beginning of the end or the end of the beginning, he refused to answer but confirmed it is the right question to ask, again confirming the nature of the record and that it can be played either way to get a different viewpoint of everything. I love that, you know. DNA is up next, and whew, this song, the video too is fucking great. Don Cheadle's in it, and it's great. I implore you all to go watch that. But on DNA, Kendrick Lamar adopts multiple viewpoints, celebrating, critiquing, and exploring his Black heritage and culture. In the music video, like I said, him and Don Cheadle appear to trade bars, engaging in an argument, using the song's lyrics during an interrogation scene. We also learn that DNA stands for Dead Nigger Association. Lamar is wearing a traditional kung fu uniform throughout the piece. In an interview with Pitchfork, Don Cheadle confirmed that he inadvertently inspired the Kung Fu Kenny persona. Cheadle portrayed a Chinese-speaking martial artist named Kenny in the 2001 action comedy sequel Rush Hour 2. It says, quote, check the video out for it if you somehow haven't seen it. Oh, that's me. Ha, sorry. Check the video out, right, if you haven't seen it. So this whole song, it's just nonstop. It's so aggressive, but also so thought-provoking, which is what I love about it. There's no chorus. It's just him, like, flowing straight for pretty much, like, 3 minutes straight. He's just getting it, right? Then the last bit, similar to the song Backseat Freestyle off of Good Kid, Mad City, he turns it up another notch at the, you know, somehow goes even harder with some of the lyrics that, you know, it's just like, he somehow turns it up and flows. It's crazy how he does that, but these lyrics played in my head, like, constantly the last few weeks I was at CentOS. So he says, tell me something, you motherfuckers can't tell me nothing, I'd rather die than listen to you, you know, and it's like, fuck yeah. But then he proceeds to just, like, kill it for a minute straight. And I wish that I could, like, rap that. Like, I don't really, I try to sing a little bit here and there on the podcast, if you've been here before, right? I'm not going to do that this time, I don't think, because I just can't. I can't do it. Not even close to how he does it. So, but that song, it's incredible, right? Right into Ya, which is a good song, where he still is referencing a bit of the Fox News segment that ended the first track, Blood. So in that song, or in Blood, I think I didn't mention it, like, they say something like, Kendrick Lamar stated his views on police or something. He's like, they want to kill us in the streets, faux show or something. And then the lady in the clip says, like, oh, rappers, or they can't, or something. Like, they'd be real dismissive of him and the way he feels about Fox News, I guess, right? So in this song, he actually calls it out again, except he calls out Geraldo's punk ass by name. I don't have much to say about it, because DNA is so good. And then Element is track four, which is also really good. So it's like, it kind of makes this track easy to, not necessarily forget, but it's sandwiched between two of the best songs on the album. So it's kind of like, you know, what do you do? Right? But so man, okay. So Element starts off and he says, I'm willing to die for this shit. I didn't cry for this shit, might take a life for this shit. Put the Bible down and go eye for an eye for this shit. DOT my enemy won't catch a vibe for this shit. Hey, I've been stomped out in front of my mama. My daddy commissary made it to commas. Bitch, all my grandma's dead. So ain't nobody praying for me. I'm on your head. Hey, 30 million later, you know the feds watching. Auntie on my telegram, like, be cautious. I be hanging out at Tams. I be on Stockton. I don't do it for the gram. I do it for Compton. I'm willing to die for this shit, nigga. I'll take your fucking life for this shit, nigga. We ain't going back to broke. Family selling dope. That's why you mania-ass rap niggas better know. Like, that whole fucking part, that opens the song. Now, if you listen to anything by him before, again, his delivery is so unique and everything, but man, it's like top form for the song, right? Excuse that terrible rapping, but that's, I was going to try to just like read the lyrics, but I can't do it. That whole opening's great. Then the ending line too, where he says, the last LP, I tried to lift the black artist, but it's the difference between black artists and whack artists. And it's like, man, who is he talking about there? In a Rolling Stone interview, he's actually asked about that line. He said, how would I define a whack artist? A whack artist uses other people's music for their approval. We're talking about someone that is scared to make their own voice, chases somebody else's success and their thing, but runs away from their own thing, right? That's what keeps the game watered down. Everybody's not going to be able to be a Kendrick Lamar. I'm not telling you to rap like me. Be you. It's as simple as that. I watch a lot of good artists go down like that because you're so focused on what numbers this guy has done, and it dampens your own creativity, which ultimately dampens the listener, because at the end of the day, it's not for us. It's for the person driving to their 9-to-5 that don't feel like they want to go to work that morning, right? So that's pretty, you know, well said, right? On to Feel, a song that until you really read the lyrics, I loved it anyway, but like after really diving into it, it's like, oof. So on the song, Kendrick catalogs the wide range of feelings, particularly negative ones, that his stardom has elicited. It feels like nobody's looking out for him, yet cites a strong desire to isolate himself from friends and family. He boasts about his status in music, but notes that the very same industry that he dominates is full of toxicity. Despite having been at the peak of his critical and commercial success over the past few years, Kendrick continues to grapple with emotional, interpersonal, and spiritual problems. He routinely explores the darker sides of his life on his music. Depression and self-hate are several things that he's discussed before. Now, my favorite part comes in the second verse when he says, I feel like it's just me. He says, I feel like it's just me. Look, I feel like I can't breathe. I feel like I can't sleep. I feel heartless often off this feeling of falling off, falling apart. Darkest hours lost to filling the void of being employed with balling, streets is talking, filling the blanks with coffins, fill up the banks with dollars, fill up the graves with fathers, fill up the babies with bullshit. And, you know, the first line can be interpreted as Kendrick speaking on the loneliness that accompanied his success. The lines that follow reveal that he is actually speaking on his depression. Then the streets talking line is him talking about things, you know, going on, you know, with life where he grew up, I think. Like in Compton, right? The fill up the graves with father's line is a comment, it seems, on young men dying at the hands of street violence and whatnot. It's all spit really fast, and it's kind of easy to miss it without going and really, really listening to it. But it's just like, it really lands so heavy, you know? The ending, too, kind of speaks for itself, but it's also pretty great. You know, he says, I feel like skating off. I feel like waiting for him. Maybe it's too late for him. I feel like the whole world wants me to pray for him, but who the fuck's praying for me? So, again, self-explanatory, and Loyalty is up next, and it's pretty much the only song I've ever liked that has Rihanna in it, so there's that. It's got a, I feel like it's one of the most, like, radio-ready types of songs on the record. Not that it doesn't have a deeper meaning, but it's pretty self-explanatory. I do love the line, though, where he's rapping or whatever, and he's like, You can take a nigga, he can meet me outside. You can babysit him when I leave him outside. Like a slick way of saying that he'll knock his ass out, right? So I always love that line. But Pride is up next. which is a very introspective track that continues the album's kind of dives into the religious themes a little more. I guess consider Proverbs chapter 11, verse 2. When pride comes, then comes disgrace, but with the humble is wisdom. Kendrick delves deep into his own pride and his recognition as one of the best rappers alive, causing tension between his ideals and his actions. The vocal pitch varies from high to low throughout the song, which reflects the contrast between his ideals and his actions. Pride is often considered the original and most serious of the seven deadly sins. It's the direct perversion of humility that makes humans more godlike, I guess. The stark contrast between Pride's beat and Humble's beat is very intentional. Pride has a very soft-spoken, humble beat, while Humble's beat is bombastic and in your face, each instrument paradoxically contrasting the topic of their respective songs. I love the line, too, "I can't fake humble just because your ass is insecure." And goddamn, one more time, "I can't fake humble just because your ass is insecure." If I haven't been there with friends, girlfriends, family, etc., etc., etc. I've always been a person who is, I'm proud of what I've accomplished, and I've achieved goals and all that stuff, right? But some people like to take that pride as being, as me boasting or being arrogant or whatever. And it's like, confidence and pride don't equate to arrogance. People who don't do shit, though, or who may be slightly jealous or whatever the case may be, get offended by you being this way, but in reality, that's their fucking problem. Like, I'm not going to hide my accomplishments and my happiness because you're insecure about whatever you're insecure about, and now you're projecting your shit onto me. Like, I don't have time for that shit, right? And a true partner or friend will celebrate you as opposed to taking offense to your success. So next up, Humble. Great song, radio ready, but still great. So here, he's challenging his competition, right? It was released a week after the first single, like I said, the Heart Part 4, the promotional single. It features a lot of religious imagery mixed with urban life, such as Kendrick in priest robes and a moving reenactment of Leonardo da Vinci's painting, The Last Supper, in the video, juxtaposing this with the concept of humility in the chorus. On a religious note, the song could also be a reference to the verse, James chapter 4, verse 7, "So humble yourself before God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you." Thus linking to April 7th, the date Kendrick told the industry to have their shit together, which is fucking great. In that song, right, I love how he says that in the Heart Part 4, he's like, he's saying all kind of cool shit, and then he stops and he's like, this is it forever. Yeah, I got to April 7th to get your shit together. It's like, fuck. Like, just put the whole industry on notice, right? And I mean, and then came out with this album. So I was like, man, y'all, even if you did have your shit together at that point, it didn't fucking matter that year. This album just crushed everything. But so then anyway, track 9, Lust. Kendrick's perspective on the repetitive nature of life is what they say this is about, right? Centered around the themes of sexual intimacy, Kendrick explores the monotonous routine of daily life for men, women, and those with fame and wealth, respectively. These lifestyles often involve lust of all forms. He raps from the perspective of a conceited, lustful man. This perspective is reminiscent of the message conveyed in Kendrick's Poe Man's Dreams, His Vice, off of Section 80. At first glance, it seems Kendrick is portraying an ideal day for a man. However, he ends the anecdote with, Whatever you're doing, just make it count, which serves as a satirical jab at a lifestyle where little of value is accomplished and the day is wasted on weed, sex, lean, guns, and partying. Ultimately, the man is giving into his lustful desires and it has become an unproductive member of society. Kendrick uses the refrain from before to recreate a female version of the same ideas presented in the first verse, the lifestyle of lust-driven and selfish individuals. Kendrick is sarcastically encouraging women to live the lifestyle glorified by worldly individuals and many rappers, endeavors which accomplish nothing of worth. In this case, it includes vain pursuits, masturbation, and calling up her boyfriend to say something, to call him and tell him he ain't shit, is what he says in the song, right? To call up your baby daddy, tell him he ain't shit, and it's really great. It includes seeking social validation on Instagram and reinforcing arrogant tendencies, taking drugs and showing off in the club. This is all that kind of stuff. Kind of tells a story of all of that, right? Love is up next. This finds Kendrick Lamar musing on the woman in his life, presumably his fiance, Whitney Alford, whom he has been with or been in a relationship with since high school. Kendrick uses his ballad or this ballad to ask the essential questions to his partner to solidify the most important aspect of their relationship, love. Coincidentally, lust precedes it and is like the complete opposite of this song. The chorus on this song is so fucking catchy. Yeah, he says, sipping bubbly, feeling lovely, living lovely. Says, sipping bubbly, feeling lovely, living lovely. Just love me. I want to be with you. Hey, I want to be with you. And this goes on like that, right? It's pretty great. Don't mind that singing, but it's pretty awesome. Then the refrain after that, he says, if I didn't ride blades on curb, would you still love me? If I made up my mind at work, would you still love me? Then I love this. Keep it 100. I'd rather you trust me than to love me. Keep it a whole 100. Don't got you, but got nothing. Hey. So that trust line has always kind of stuck out to me. I really do like that he makes the distinction that he'd rather trust than love, because really, while we love people, trust is the foundation for that love. So without trust, you have nothing. It's a very subtle line, and honestly, I guess kind of simple, but it is very powerful and really makes a good point, right? Very thought-provoking. Good goddamn song. So I'm going to try to hold together for this one here, because this is my favorite song on the record and probably the most hard-hitting. Triple X featuring U2 of all people, right? So it opens up with the lines, America, God bless you if it's good to you. America, please take my hand. Can you help me understand? And then it cuts them off, right? So the U.S. was built on the principle of the American dream, which is the idea that people in America are protected by the U.S. Constitution, can choose any career, practice any religion, and follow the pursuit of happiness. While this policy was limited to white male property owners at its conception, it slowly expanded out to everyone else living in the U.S. Now, he's not the only one, but Kendrick Lamar believes that these rights don't still apply. They still don't apply to everyone, right? The word understand cutting off represents the lack of understanding of problems in America. Bono's final word around is also cut off to bookend the ending of the song. So the first verse, Kendrick Lamar says, throw a stake off the ark to a pool full of sharks, he'll take it. Leave him in the wilderness with a sworn nemesis, he'll make it. Take the gratitude from him, I bet he'll show you something. Whoa. You know, the stake here to me is maybe an opportunity or something, or someone in a position of power throwing us, black people, a bone, I guess. In the wilderness line, you know, leaving us with a sworn nemesis is either him commenting on gang violence and the lack of caring or help involved with trying to lift people out of that circle, or it could be, again, white people specifically being our nemesis and systematically doing what they can to stop us and keep us down while saying, meh, they'll make it out, despite the game being rigged against us, you know? And then finally, the gratitude line, which is probably my favorite. Now that they've given us these opportunities and whatnot, perceived opportunities, if they take them away through whatever fucked up ways they do that at times, then people may revert to criminal ways to feed their families, or maybe just simply get angry and voice their anger about things. And then them saying, I bet I'll show you something. Whoa. It's them saying, like, you see how these people really are? They don't appreciate anything we try to do for them. And, I mean, that's the first three lines of the song. that's already coming in that hot, right? As the song goes on, he raps about a friend of his, like his son got killed, right? And he says, in the song, he says, as the perspective of the father, you know, he says, how does it start off? He says, so, you know, Johnny don't want to go to school no more. And then Johnny said, books ain't cool no more. He's talking about, you know, whatever. And he's like, Johnny caught a body yesterday out hustling. God bless America. You know, we all love you. And yesterday, I heard Cover my dog, you know, they killed his only son. He was sobbing, he was mobbing, way belligerent and drunk, talking out his head and something for what the Lord had done. He said, Kada, can you pray for me? It's been a fucked up day for me. I knew that you anointed, show me how to overcome. You know, he's going through all that and everything. And then this guy's like pleading with him, like, please show me a way to deal with this that's nonviolent, right? And then Kendrick says to him, I can't sugarcoat the answer for you. This is how I feel. If somebody killed my son, that means somebody's getting killed. Tell me what you do for love, loyalty, and passion of all the memories, collected moments you could never touch. That line, that whole thing, the moments you could never touch line, just really, it's rough. It's really rough. Because, I mean, oh boy, I just like, yeah, I think of my own children in that instance, of course, and it's just a shitty feeling, you know. But then at the end, you know, he goes into, well, actually, I'm trying to think, no, there's another line before that I really like too, because I kind of love the he says something like, he says, I'll chip a nigga, then throw the blower in his lap, walk myself to the court like, bitch, I did that. And like, he goes through all this stuff and he says, ain't no black power when your baby's killed by a coward. That I also like too, you know. But, you know, anyway, he goes into the verse 3, kind of goes back to war, like to what the beginning of the song was saying. It says, Hail Mary, Jesus and Joseph, the great American flag is wrapped in dragged with explosives, compulsive disorders, sons and daughters, barricaded blocks and borders. Look what you taught us. It's murder on my street, your street, back streets, Wall Street, corporate offices, banks, employees and bosses with homicidal thoughts. Donald Trump's in office. We lost Barack and promised to never doubt him again. But is America honest or do we bask in sin? Pass the gin. I mix it with American blood, then bash him in. You crippin' or you married to blood? I'll ask again. Oops, accident. It's nasty when you set us up, then roll the dice, then bet us up. You overnight the big rifles and tell Fox to be scared of us. Gang members or terrorists, etc., etc. America's reflections of me. That's what a mirror does. So it's a lot. Again, you know, comment on the way America views the black, the way America views the black community. As Kendrick points out, you know, the American government has a pattern of setting up African Americans by implementing policies like the war on drugs, which disproportionately targeted black men. Politicians metaphorically roll the dice to make financial gains off of their hardship. Together with the war on drugs, the privatization of America's prison system has made the over-incarceration of black men, of black people, period, a profitable industry. He also references Fox News multiple times throughout this album, again on here. You know, he addresses the fearful rhetoric Fox uses during its discussions about the black community. Rather than blaming Fox for perpetuating fear, Kendrick recognizes that this fear is inevitable. Just like a mirror can distort someone's features so they can appear unattractive, Lamar's reputation can be distorted as well. A point he highlights by pronouncing that's what America does to sound like that's what America does, like America, right? Whew. So, on to fear. Kendrick explores three instances of true terror at ages 7, 17, and 27, respectively. In the first verse, he explores the fear he experienced growing up in the hood with a strict mother. The second verse explores the life of a teenage Kendrick expressing his fear of dying at a young age, especially with the rampant gang activity and police brutality in Compton, California. He takes a distinct turn in tone, rapping in a deep, monotone voice that denotes adolescent depression. In the third and fourth verse, Kendrick revisits the anxieties found on To Pimp a Butterfly, the lack of confidence in himself and his abilities, and the fear of losing the life he has built for himself, particularly at the age of 27. This notion may have been inspired by the familiar concept of the 27 Club, which is, of course, a group of famous artists and musicians who died at that age. The fourth verse also acts as a thesis statement for the entire album, combining references to every other song on the track list. He goes beyond simply naming the tracks by addressing the recurring questions from the album's opener, Blood. Is it wickedness? Is it weakness? You decide. Kendrick said that the verses in the song are the best he's ever written in an interview with ID Magazine in October of 2017. So there you go. In verse 2, he says, I'll probably die anonymous. I'll probably die with promises. I'll probably die walking back home from the candy house. I'll probably die because these colors are standing out. I'll probably die because I ain't know DeMarcus was snitching. I'll probably die at these house parties fucking with bitches. I'll probably die from witnesses leaving me false accused. I'll probably die from thinking that me and your hood was cool. Or maybe die from pressing the line, acting too extra. Or maybe die because these smokers are more than desperate. I'll probably die from one of these bats and blue badges. Body slammed on black and white paint, my bones snapping. Or maybe die from panic or die from being too lax. Or die from waiting on it, die because I'm moving too fast. I'll probably die trying to buy weed at the apartments. I'll probably die trying to defuse two homies arguing. I'll probably die because that's what you do when you're 17. All worries in a hurry. I wish I controlled things. So again, the way that's all written and laid out that way, you know, he touches on the fear of death very well. Again, better than any other rapper I can think of as far as that. You know, all the scenarios in which you could die are, as a young black man, I've seen myself or, you know, my friends growing up, I've seen shit like that, like been kind of adjacent to it at times, right? It just hits so hard, right? Kind of reminds me of a time, buddies of mine, I was probably like 19, 20 years old maybe, and, you know, it was like midnight, and they came knocking on my window and shit, like, hey man, what's up? I'm like, fuck y'all doing, what y'all doing here? I was like, oh, I'm just hanging out, man. And they were just like, man, we're going riding, man. You want to come? I was like, don't really know what that means. So I think I'm going to pass. And like they kind of were like, man, sure, you know, we'll go ride, do whatever. To this day, I don't know what the fuck they were up to. I don't know what they were doing. But it all seemed fishy. And it all seemed like a bad idea. And that's one of those things, man. It feels like if, you know, I could have died going with them, going to do whatever they were doing, right? And say something went haywire, went wrong, or something crazy happened. Now I'm with them, and I'm stuck, and I get arrested, or worse. Again, you know, it's just little things like that. I think back on certain decisions I've made, and it's like, man, that was probably a good idea not to do that thing. Because like I said before in the podcast, man, you know, there was times, I mean, and this goes for anybody, I guess, but it's like, you know, I was one or two decisions away from not being where I am now. Right. Like eventually I would have never made it to where I am now had I made this poor decision so many years ago. Right. When I had the chance to make this poor decision. You know what I mean? So stuff like that, like I said, it just hits real hard or whatever, you know. So track 13, God flaunts his successes, how it feels and why he works so hard. Throughout the track, he compares the sensation to what God feels like. In the first verse, Kendrick talks himself up with all of his achievements, only to be reminded that he's a mortal man in the second verse. In a sense, he's reminding other rappers who see themselves as God that they're not in charge. I mean, some people hear that and go, oh, he's cocky, he's too arrogant. But fuck that. He deserves it, every bit of it, I feel like. He deserves to be that way, in my opinion, right? But moving on, the excellent closer, Duckworth. Track 14. It's a street tale about how Anthony, quote, top dog Tiffith, was planning a second robbery at a local KFC where Kendrick's father, nicknamed Ducky, was working back in the 90s. The robbery could have resulted in Ducky's death, but his generosity towards top dog to refrain from harming him actually saved his life. This happened many years before Top Dog would coincidentally sign a 15-year-old Kendrick Lamar to his label, Top Dog Entertainment. Duckworth is Kendrick's legal surname. On the song Untitled 2, 6/23/2014, Kendrick touches on his relationship with Top and how dangerous he can be. He said, me and Top is like a Kobe and Phil, a father figure. Fuck with him, you get killed. Fuck with me and he'll kill you himself. But it's a crazy ass story, man. And I also love how the song tells a story too. No choruses, there's like all these beat switches and like tempo changes and everything. It's just so fucking good, man. I love how this where he says, Anthony was the oldest of seven, well-respected, calm and collected, laughing and joking, made life easier. Hard times, mama on crack, a four-year-old telling his nanny he needed her, his family history, pimping and banging. He was meant to be dangerous. Clocked him a grip and started slanging. 15, scraping up his jeans with quarter pieces. $10,000 out of a project housing. That's on the daily. Seen his first meal, 20 years old, had a couple of babies, had a couple of shooters, caught a murder case. Fingerprints on the gun, they assuming, but witnesses couldn't prove it. That was back when he turned his back and they killed his cousin. He beat the case and went back to hustling. Bird shuffling, Anthony rang. The first in the projects with the two-tone Mustang, that 5.0 thing, that 5.0 came. They say 5.0 came, circling parking lots and parking spots and hopping out while harassing the corner blocks. Crooked cops told Anthony he should kick it. He brushed him off and walked back to the Kentucky Fried Chicken. See, at this chicken spot, there was this light-skinned nigga that talked a lot with a curly top and a gap in his teeth. He worked the window. His name was Ducky. He came from the streets, the Robert Taylor home, Southside Projects, Chirac, the Terror Dome. Drove to California with the woman on him and $500. They had a son, hoping that he'd see college. Hustling on the side with a 9-to-5 to freak it. Cadillac Seville, he'd ride his son around on weekends. Three-piece special with his name on the shirt pocket. Across the street from the project, Anthony planned to rob it. Stuck up the place before, back in 84. That's when affiliation was really at Gears of War. So many relatives selling us devilish works, killing us, crime, intelligent, felonious, prevalent proposition with nines. Ducky was well aware. They robbed the manager and shot a customer last year. He figured he'd get on these niggas' good sides. Free chicken every time Anthony posted in line. Two extra biscuits. Anthony liked him and then let him slide. They didn't kill him. In fact, it looked like they're the last to survive. Pay attention. That one decision changed both of their lives. One curse at a time. Reverse the manifest in good karma, and I'll tell you why. You take two strangers and put them in a random predicament. Give them a soul so they can make their own choices and live with it. 20 years later, them same strangers you make them meet again inside recording studios where they're reaping their benefits. Then you start reminding them about that chicken incident. Whoever thought that the greatest rapper would come from coincidence? Because if Anthony killed Ducky, Top Dog could be serving life while I grew up without a father and die in a gunfight. Then the gunshot happens, and that's it, right? What's also interesting about this, which I mentioned earlier, is how the gunshot ends the song, and right after, every single song has a snippet played in reverse. So again, playing it from this track back to the start, the story changes and is goddamn genius. I really need this collector's edition vinyl with the trackless reverse, but just real quick, because it took me a minute to really read it and understand it. So Anthony is Top Dog. They're the same person, right? He calls him Anthony in one sentence, and later in the same sentence, he calls him Top Dog. So basically, if Top Dog would have killed Kendrick's father, then Top Dog would be serving life, right? Kendrick's father would be dead, and he would have to grow up. He'd have to grow up without a father, and then he predicting that he'd probably die in a gunfight, right? So it's a whole, that again, super heavy the way that ends, but I mean, man, it's so good. I mean, 5 out of 5, of course. Pick it up, you know, you won't regret it one bit. And I mean, I know it's been a long one. I'm just really excited to get back and talk to everybody and talk about this album and just kind of, like I said, I don't know, just feels good to be back. And thanks for sticking with me for this long. Like I said earlier in the episode, I have some really cool shit coming up for the month of March. February will just be kind of like regular episodes, right? But I still have some pretty good albums coming up. But March is where it's at. So like I said, stay tuned, and hopefully, you know, you'll all be sticking around and can be a part of everything coming up. So with that, I am Jeremy Levine, and this is the Vinyl Countdown, of course. I hope to be in your ears next week, everybody. Thanks. Take care.